And as you might have noticed, I'm just on the computer today. So if we have any problems, or if I have any problems, wave at me, put something in the chat, and I will connect with my phone as well as the computer. So hopefully it will work with both. So I'd like to welcome you to our last conference call for RM 103, Understand Legal Risk, and acknowledging that I'm hosting it from the beautiful traditional territories of the Kwamundang First Nation and Tana Watching Council. The moon was so big last night, it was just gorgeous out, and lots of shadows all through the trees that we have in our area of the north. So just a final reminder that RM 103 is a very brief introduction to legal risk. The rules, regulations, constitutional provisions, and legislative enactments or judicial opinions on the matter of legal risk vary from territory to territory, province to province. So if you have questions that I haven't been able to answer, or if you need to have a waiver looked at or anything legal, please make sure that you consult either the appropriate authorities or legal counsel in your own territory, because I don't want to be giving anybody the wrong information. That would not be so good. So I'll do a quick round of introductions just so that we can go through, and then maybe you guys can remind me. I can see most of you on the screen, or maybe you can also put in the chat if you're a lawyer for the defense or for the plaintiff. So Holly's here, and Holly, you were with the defense, is that correct? Okay. And also with the defense was Deanne, right? And Deanne's here. And Nathan, you were part of the lawyers for the defense as well, right? And you're here. And then we have Misha, Igor, Melanie, Juliana, and Timonakis, is that right? All five of you worked on lawyers for the plaintiff. And in Canadian courtrooms, civil cases, which is what negligence falls under, civil cases are tried, the plaintiff always presents first. So today we're going to have the plaintiff present first. And then Raquel, I'm really sorry about everything that happened for you last week. And so Raquel's actually posted the alternative RLA, and I really encourage you guys to have a look at it because it will give you some insight. It's similar to the one that the rest of you did, but it's a hockey incident. So those of you who play hockey and like hockey will be able to relate to it. And Raquel's done a great job of describing what the lawsuit was, what happened, what came into play, what the decision should be, and things like that. So that is in the forum for you to read. So thanks for taking the initiative and doing that, Raquel. And if we have time at the end, what we'll do is I'll ask you to sort of compare what you learned in your case to what we come up with in this case. So before we get into our cases and our rulings, I just wanted to cover off a couple of slides or a bit of content that we haven't quite dug into. We did talk about transferring risk, and maybe I won't open the slides because there's only two of them, but slides 39 and 40 are the only two. So you can just listen if you don't want to have the slides there. But there's two other ways that we can transfer risk away from ourselves as an individual or an organization. One of them is contracting out services. And I know that you've heard of how Elder Active is an example of contracting out services. So Raquel's organization contracts people to do like Pilates and yoga and things like that. So contracting out basically means that somebody else does something for you. They're not an employee of your organization. So when you contract out, there will not be vicarious liability because the contractor is an independent individual. So that person might deliver an activity for you, they might coordinate an event for you, they might look after your facility, do the upkeep on your equipment, come in and fix your Zamboni, things like that. They might drive a bus, they might fly an airplane. There's lots of different ways that you can use contracting services. It might be an individual or a business. And it's actually pretty good to contract out if you don't have the expertise. So if you have a Zamboni that needs fixing and you don't know how to do it, Don't try and do it yourself because you're putting yourself at risk. Use somebody who knows the Zamboni and knows that equipment. Make sure that that person or organization has their own liability insurance. So the Recreation and Parks Association of the Yukon has a couple of different programs, but part of that program agreement is that the organization carries their own insurance coverage and will look after any incidents first so that it protects RK and their insurance. But remember, if the activity is delivered on your facility, so Melanie with your minor hockey, if they're delivering something in your facility, there's still the potential for owners or premises liability because it is your facility. The other way to transfer or escape liability is to transfer risk through insurance. And I think everybody in this day and age understands insurance. Personally, I'm worried about my own home insurance after the cost of insurance coverage in NWT this past year. So you know that I think we all understand that insurance is a big business, but that it's also quite costly, but that we also need to have it. So insurance is a key strategy for managing risk in sport and recreation. Make sure that your insurance is in place before you open a facility, before you run a program, or even offer a special event like a Christmas bonfire. But don't rely only on insurance because it's only one tool. It does not replace good risk management practices. So slide 40 lists some of the different types of insurance that you might get in recreation settings. And you can find out more about these in chapter 3 of the booklet that I put in activity 1. And also the Insurance Bureau of Canada. I'll pop that into the chat here. The Insurance Bureau of Canada is also a good source for that. Holly, you've got your hand up. Did you have something to add to?
Sorry, that wasn't an accident.
Okay. I just didn't want to miss it if it was something, because sometimes lots of people have good experiences. And we can come back to talking about insurance at the end. I just wanted to make sure we have time to do our cases today. So general liability, you guys all know, how many people know that they're organizational liability insurance? Just wave your hand or put up your hand. Okay. And usually Hamlets like Nathan and Kumnapik and Juliana, sometimes Hamlets do what's called self-insure. So they might be providing insurance in a different way where they set money aside in case something happens and don't actually go and purchase insurance. So it could be different for you. And same, Melanie, for you, it might be interesting to know how the town of Watson Lake does it as well. So general liability insurance is the one that covers you if there's a negligence lawsuit, so somebody's hurt. If you're having liquor in your facilities or anybody's having it, you want to make sure there's liquor liability insurance because that can cover damages that result from intoxication. Kumnapik, can you write out, what does NEBS stand for? Maybe you can just write it out in the chat for me because that's new language to me. There's also, how many of you work with a nonprofit board? Hands up if you do. So nonprofit boards should have, they don't all have, directors and officers insurance. Because, like Raquel with Elder Active and Deanne with Squash Yukon, those directors and officers on the board could be held personally liable if something happens. So they need to have insurance that covers them off and their volunteers. So we don't want to put our volunteers in a position where, you know, their whole livelihood is at risk because of that. So, like, if you imagine they could be sued for mismanagement of funds, and that has happened recently there was a case in NWT where that happened. There's also, like, if somebody feels like they're wrongfully dismissed or laid off, then that is also another type of lawsuit that could happen. So it's not just somebody gets hurt. Oh, okay, so Kuminaket, that's an employment benefit service. That's for employees then, so that would cover some things for employees. So thanks for that. Now I know what it stands for. The other one that sometimes contractors will take out is errors and omissions insurance. And if you have an accountant, how many of you work with an accountant or financial person? Anybody work with lawyers? Okay, so, but there are two types of individuals that would provide contract services, and they should have errors and omissions insurance, because what happens if they do something wrong, like if the accountant does something wrong and it costs your organization money, they don't want to be personally responsible. So the errors and omissions insurance helps provide their coverage. So if you're working with contractors, make sure they have that. Not all contractors, but at least the ones that might be providing you advice, that if it's the wrong advice, is costly. And then how many of you own an automobile or a car? Okay, so you have your own automobile insurance, but you also know that your personal insurance is perhaps a little different from insurance that you might have on work vehicles. It also, if you're transporting say athletes to an event in your own personal vehicle, or participants, or even sometimes other contractors, make sure that you have the right insurance in place on your automobile. So that's you don't want to be personally liable if something goes wrong. So if there's another type of insurance that you guys work with, go ahead and pop that in the chat. And if anyone would like to come back to the discussion about insurance, just pop me a note in the chat as well if you can. I think everyone's on their computer, so that should, I think if you can't find the chat, it's down at the bottom. You just click on it and it pops open. So let's jump into our cases. And so what we're going to do is we're going to start with hearing both sides of the 2023 Miller versus Cox case. And as you will have read, and we'll give some background because Raquel did an alternative one, so Raquel's going to be a good jury member for you to have because she didn't dig into one side or the other. So you get to listen to both sides, Raquel, and then make a decision as well. So in this case, the plaintiff, who's a member of a recreational soccer team, not a pro soccer team, but a recreational one, was injured during a game by a tackle from the defendant. So the plaintiff is looking for damages for the injuries that were sustained. And the injuries, for those injuries, the defendant was penalized a yellow card, not a red card, but a yellow card. So as I mentioned, in Canada, the plaintiff presents their case first, and then the defense responds. So I'm going to give each of you 5 minutes to present your cases, and you should offering to do it on behalf of the team of the plaintiff, because she's got a presentation to share. And what I'd like to do, so if you're a lawyer for the defense, think of some questions that you might want to ask the plaintiff. Nisha, you're the lawyer for plaintiff, right? Yeah. Okay, do you want, so I'll go ahead, Nisha's going to take over. You just have to unmute.
Sure, and I'm feeling less spicy than I thought I was going to feel. So if my co-lawyers want to jump in, please do so. So, yes. So, we are the lawyers for the plaintiff, Mr. Miller. And, so based on, I assume obviously everybody's read, the detail case. We are assuming that there was occupier's negligence. We recognize that Mr. Cox was forceful in nature, but this is part of the game. So, but on the other hand, the Miller Soccer League did not provide the right required paperwork, so the informed consent and the liability waivers to players. So, therefore, there's going to be occupier's negligence or liability states that premises that the renter of the facility will be held accountable if an injury occurs during an activity, in this case, which was a soccer game, permitted that the facility itself is in good condition, which was the case. So there was no, the facility, it was in good condition. The team wasn't, you know, externally or like adversely playing the game in an irregular way that's outside of FIFA standards. And so what we're saying is that because the facility was up to standard and it was the organizer event that failed to be a responsible league and sports events organizer because they weren't able to provide the paperwork that was required to reduce limit the liability, they are being held accountable for the charges. So, we assume that duty and standard of met by the league, as I kind of mentioned a little bit before, was that they did not provide a medical team on site for the necessity of the game, so there was negligence in preparing for possible injuries. They did not provide three officials as per the FIFA rules, so they weren't actually following FIFA rules exactly. There was only one official on site. They did not inform the participants about the inherent risks when playing the game, which is the liability, the informed consent. And then they did not inform all the participants about the legal risks when playing a game. Again, they failed to inform the players. And then they did not implement informed consent and a waiver as part of managing legal risk, which is our main reason for why we are holding the league account for the damages. And did not inform the participants in writing about the modified FIFA rules regarding unlimited substitution. So, making it a little bit short. So if anybody wants to jump in and like support these claims by any chance, that's great. But so the element of proximate cause is present when the tackle itself was a direct Miller's injury. Carl Cox's tackle was brutal in nature, clearly endangering the safety of the opponent. And which is our plaintiff. It is evident that there is a direct link between behavior and injury, as Carl Cox was aggressive in nature, and there was no contributory negligence in the plaintiff's behavior. So Mr. Miller exercised reasonable care, and moreover, his behavior did not contribute to the injury, and he cannot assume part of liability. So our final verdict is that Carl Cox is guilty of foul play, but we recognize that this is part of the game, especially if players weren't informed about the rules, about the potential liabilities and potential dangers of participating in this game. And so we find Miller's Soccer League guilty of negligence and therefore will be sued on behalf of Mr. Miller.
Great. So what you guys did then is you acknowledged the fact that Mr. Cox had a role to play, but you find the greater responsibility or liability rests on the league.
Yes.
Okay. Does the team, anybody from the team want to jump in and add anything to that before we move to the defense? And you'll get a chance for a rebuttal as well.
I can just say a few words. I want the other group to know that everything mentioned in this case, they are actual people with their real names and real league and real field. And also it was very difficult for me to be involved in this case because the referee in this game is a friend of mine. And at that time, I was responsible for all the officials in BC where this happened. So it was a little bit difficult for me to be involved, but I managed somehow. So that's it.
Wow, Igor, thank you for explaining that. And my apologies, I picked that case because it was recent, but I never dreamt that anybody would have a personal interest or personal connection to it. And in the way I teach it, I don't know if that's a great approach. So thank you for bearing with us, but thank you for also explaining that. That must have been quite challenging.
Yeah, it was, but I understand that that's part of the learning process. So I learned a lot as well, and thank you for that.
And were you aware of the actual outcome of the case when you participated in the discussion?
No, I was not, because it was confident, and I didn't want to get into it too much, so I just stayed aside.
Okay. Well, thank you, and I, again, my apologies for placing you. Like, what are the chances, right? That so thank you for sharing that. Oh, you got a big heart for me, so there you go. Okay, so let's go to the lawyers for the defense. I'll let you make your case, and then at the end of the case, I'll let you ask back to the plaintiff if there's anything, and then we'll get the plaintiff to respond back to the defendant, and then we'll go through the jury process. So it is from Holly and Deanne and Nathan. Is one of you going to present your case?
I can do that.
Okay.
Or if Holly, do you want to do that, or do you want to do it?
Either one works for me. I have everything that we all wrote just written down here.
Okay, so I can you good to go then. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I do have written. I do have everything in mind.
Okay. So we argued that there is no negligence because both players played for years and they both know the inherent risks and FIFA rules. The referee witnessed it and determined it was not serious, so he gave a yellow card instead of a red card. Everyone knows there are risks and accidents in high impact sports. The referee witnessed it and decided it wasn't serious. And then any other ways to escape liability would be waivers. They didn't hold any practices, but practices could be added. Any notes and statistics for backup, so that they know who was at each game, if there was any penalties, etc. They could record the games to escape liability and make sure the risks are explained ahead of time.
That's great. Thanks. Deanne or Nathan, do you want to add anything? Go ahead, Deanne.
Taking care of the game, so they were playing the game for like 20 years. They played it as a youth, and they have played in the different leagues and the different tournaments, right? So they were well known about the rules, regulations, and the injury, what kind of the injury can happen in the game. There was a referee, there was an organized league, everything was set, and there are chances whenever you're playing with the like opponent for the matches that there are chances you can get injured. So, and maybe this is the time I can answer the question for Misha's, like whatever the she has mentioned in the thing, right? So first thing, I think the case doesn't exist at all, because she is suing occupiers renters, right? So there is no role of Mr. Cox into that case. He's a player, right? He's playing, he's participating in the league. So it's a rental on organizer, they will be sued for that. So we don't exist into that, right? And she has mentioned a couple of points regarding the medical team and the first aid, right? So if it's all indicating towards the organizers and towards the referee. And if referee is there, so he must be, if there is no medical team, definitely we can't have the ambulance for every game. It's a recreational game, right? So there will be somebody who is trained in the first aid, right? So, and that's not a big case also, or like we can't tackle also like the ambulance and this stuff. If there is a serious injury, we can call 911 and then ambulance and the whole medical team will come in, right? FIFA rules was not followed. So first thing, it's the recreation, right? So they can change that, they can modify the rules, but there was no change in the rules. There was just one change in the rule, that was you can substitute the players as many as you want. And other than that, there was no change in the rules. And tackling the ball was permitted. It was part of the game. So Mr. Cox, he did tackle the ball the way it's supposed to be. So I don't think so that point even exists, the FIFA rules and other stuff, right? And we don't have enough evidence about the information or waiver sign or the consent sign. But I'm assuming it, because it's an organized league and things are there, they must have signed the waiver and the consent form. So I don't think so this case, going against, like, I don't know, Misa took the case in a different way or different direction. Because it's a more rental or occupiers, like, we don't exist anywhere in that. And from the referee side also, we got, like, the Mr. Cox got the yellow card. He didn't get, like, red card or something. And there's plenty of, like, if you see the evidence in the every game, there is a 5-6 players, they get the yellow card. A couple of them, they get the red card also. So there is no evidence. It was Mr. Cox who tried to injure him. It was part and parcel of the game. He was playing, he was tackling the ball, and Mr. Miller got injured. Let's say he is standing somewhere else and the ball is not possessing the ball with him, and Mr. Cox goes and hit him or do something and harm his body, then it might be some case, you know. But I don't think there is any case against Mr. Cox.
Great, thanks, Cam. So you're basically saying that the plaintiff now has said that, in a way, by saying that it's occupier's liability, that they're agreeing with you that there should be no case against Mr. Cox, and Mr. Cox did not hold any responsibility in that situation. So Igor had his hand up first, and then Misha, and then Melanie. So actually, maybe we'll go to Melanie after Igor. Misha, just to give her a chance. So Igor, over to you first.
Thank you. I will just reply to Gian regarding ambulance and medical staff on site. If you are responsible league, you cannot allow playing games without any medical teams on site. You cannot, doesn't matter professional or recreational game, injuries happen also in professional and also in many recreational games. The next thing is about the modified rules. As Misha said, there are 4 officials according to FIFA right now, but for the recreational league, 3 are mandatory. In this situation, we had only 1. And also, we cannot presume that they must have signed a waiver. We cannot say, oh, it's fine. If they signed, good. If they didn't sign, who cares? So if you're an organizer and if you take all responsibility to organize sporting events, everything should be in order. Thanks.
Thanks. Well, that's good argument for putting it back on the league. So thank you. Over to you, Melanie.
Well, Igor basically already said what I tried to say. That's a little bit better than me. But there's also, from what I understand, between the foul and actually and brutal attack coming from Carl Cox, is that because Carl Cox did not actually were able to go after the ball, because Mr. Miller was going forward, playing the ball on the right side while Mr. Cox attacked from the left side, not even being able to tackle the ball. So that was only the chance of actually holding back the player or tackle the player rather than the ball, because the player was between Mr. Cox and the ball. So there would have never been a chance for Mr. Cox to reach the ball. And I felt this needed to be taken into consideration in regarding of what's foul play or what is actually a rather brutal attack on the player. Just, could I make myself clear about that? So, because these things are also in the FIVA rules where, you know, how far can you go in your attack towards the ball rather than making it an attack on the player.
So that's another good way of putting the responsibility. In that case, with that explanation, the plaintiff is basically saying that the defendant, Mr. Cox, is at fault. So it sounds like, again, coming back to this, the initial case was between the plaintiff, Mr. Miller, and the defendant, Mr. Cox. But that the team and the team for the plaintiff, you guys are acknowledging that, yes, Mr. Cox might have been partially responsible, but really the bigger responsibility falls on the league. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Okay. Does anyone on the defense want to respond, or anyone who hasn't jumped in? Deanne's got one question, and then let's see if anyone else has any questions or thoughts, and then we're going to go take it to trial to the jury.
As the team has said about the Igor's point about the first header or the ambulance. So again, to say and the referee thing, right? Definitely, we do agree with it. You know, there's supposed to be whole medical team. The measurement's supposed to be right. The number of referees will be good. Require referees. The recording will be the number of recording of video cameras will be there. Everything, all the facilities, the FIFA rules will be followed. But my question is, where do Mr. Cox exist into this? He's not an organizer. He's a player. So whole point is doesn't, you know, go along with. And then second point, what Melanie mentioned about the tackling, like, he was going on the right, and Mr. Cox, he tackled him from the left. First thing, if you read this, the thing here on the paper, Mr. Miller, he didn't see him where he was tackling the ball. And it looks like he's lying or something to me. Because he didn't see where Mr. Cox is, and then he's saying he attacked from left or right. So I don't see anywhere. And then the referee saw the whole thing. And referee made his call on that. If he saw something like a really foul play, or, you know, because if you hit the player's leg, it's a yellow card. But if something is there, unfair play, or you just push the player, or, like, you know, you knock with your elbow and stuff, yes, he could get a red card. So referee saw the whole situation, whole scenario, and he didn't file guilty or anything on that. And he gave a yellow card.
Great, thanks. Okay, I think I just looked at the clock, and just for the sake of time, it sounds like Igor has popped in that you did not find Mr. Cox accountable. So the plaintiff then has adjusted the case, which it would have to go to court a second time to do that. So the initial case is between Miller and Cox, so the plaintiff and the defendant. So if you were the jury on this case and you were to find Mr. Cox not accountable, then you would say that there's no liability. And then Mr. Miller could come back and say, well, actually, the league is liable. So what I'd like you to consider, I've got a little bit of an activity here. And I know that you find the league guilty of negligence. So that could be a comment of the judge and the jury, and then it would probably go to a completely different trial. It wouldn't be brought into the same case because the case that's being heard is just the initial case. So, but also your thinking is really important because you're trying to piece through this. Because imagine you guys all offer recreational sports in your communities, And we're not in Vancouver where you have access to three referees and an ambulance and medical support. And sometimes we don't even have waivers for the pre-regional support that we do in the north. So it's just an I thought it was an interesting piece for us to think through. So what I'm going to do is I have a link here, and hopefully this will work. It's actually a poll, so it's a secret way of you guys being the jury. So I'd like everyone to see if you can open this link. I have to activate it, so give me 2 seconds to do that. Okay, so if you can, you all click on that link and see what you can see. I'll try and do it myself as well. And yeah, okay, I see that you've got it already. So you've got, don't rush, take your time. There's 4 pieces to what the jury would decide. If you can't find it, let me know. Like if it doesn't open for you, let me know. So I see 8 people being able to access it. Is there someone who cannot access it? Manoptic, is it working for you? Just thumbs up if it is. Okay. Juliana, working for you? Igor, is it working for you? Sometimes it is.
Yes, I already submitted it.
Okay, perfect. And yeah, it shows me that there's 2 that are complete. So I'll, Melanie, are you all good? I see your hand up on the screen.
Hello, can you guys hear me?
I can hear you, Nathan. Is it working for you or not really?
My internet's really spotty. I have to go on my cell phone.
Okay, I'm going to text you because I can see your cell phone number, a QR code that should work. Is that okay?
Yeah. All right. Okay, and then what do I do? Just
click my email? I'll text you the link. I'll put your number in first. 793. I'm going to send you one text so that then I can retreat. Let's see here. It is. If you guys are all done with paying tight, and then I'm going to share my screen. I've got 5 responses in so far, so I'll share my screen in just a moment. Yeah, probably the weather, hey? Okay, try this, and if it doesn't work,
yeah.
You have to ask.
Oh, I
got it. And to Manoptic, if you can answer the question, that's totally okay. Don't worry about it.
Miller versus Cox.
So the first one, and I'm going to share my screen here, but I'll talk through it because I know you won't be able to see it. Okay, so how many people, can you just pop in the chat, except for Nathan, if you're finished? Can you just let me know, because I can see that there's 8 done. Everyone finished? Okay, let me share my screen here so you can see what the responses are then. Share. Let me see if I can make it a little bit bigger for you though. That goes the wrong way. Okay, so you can see here that we've got 8 surveys that are done, and look at the response. So it's almost 50-50 about was there negligence or not. So really interesting. You can see how sometimes juries take a long time to make decisions. So 50-50. The interesting thing here is nobody said that the defendant or the plaintiff, the two that actually that were involved in the initial case, were liable or responsible. Most of you agree that the soccer league was responsible. So what would happen is the judge, that the soccer league wasn't named in the initial suit, so it would have to be a new case that went to trial. Then we've got what should be the settlement. So if it's the plaintiff who's asking for the settlement. So most of you thought less than $100,000 should be the settlement. And remember, this just went to court this past year. I think it was in March. So that's a pretty accurate number. A few of you thought a little bit more than that, but most of you thought not a lot. And then was there anything else that the that came to mind? So there's no evidence of informed consent or waivers, nothing else came to mind. There really is no case, it's part of what the game is, not that I can think of. So you can see the different answers that you put in there. So I thought that was a really interesting way of just you being able to make your own unbiased decision. So let me stop sharing for a minute, and I'm going to share with you what actually happened, and then I think we have enough time for Raquel to quickly share with you the case that she did as well. So now that you've sort of weighed in as a jury, I'll tell you what the actual outcome was. And so the defendant, Mr. Cox, was actually held liable for his tackle in the game. So both parties, which would have been Mr. Miller and Mr. Cox, agreed that that was the case before the case went to court. So it actually went to court with them already agreeing that there were damages. So all the court had to do was decide if the defendant, Mr. Cox, was liable or responsible for the accident or not. So they couldn't put the liability on the league because the league wasn't named in the case. And it might have gone back again, I don't know. And what they found was that both Mr. Miller and Mr. Cox were experienced soccer players. So during the game, they'd been playing on opposing teams. Mr. Miller was taking the ball towards the goal when Mr. Cox slide tackled him from behind, causing him to fall forward and injure his shoulder. So they all agreed that happened before it went to court. What they didn't agree is if Mr. Cox held that responsibility and was liable for the damages that Mr. Miller incurred or not. So the court had to look at the standard of care. And the standard of care in this case, because it's an individual player and not an organization, the standard of care looked at how the defendant should have been reasonably expected to behave during gameplay. So the court had to figure out what was safe play as compared to what was negligent or dangerous. And really it came down to what is a fair tackle. And Melanie, you mentioned this when you said, you know, was he a fair tackle because he had a good chance of getting the ball, or was it an unfair tackle and he was just trying to take the player out? So that's really what the court had to decide. So in the end, and I will share the full answer with you in the forums if you want to read it. In the end, the court decided that the defendant was fully liable, and for $103,764.11, I'll put that dollar. So those of you who guessed around $100,000 were pretty darn close. So that was the amount that Mr. Cox was liable for. they considered that the slide tackle was negligent and dangerous. So what their decision meant is that soccer players in recreational matches need to be mindful of their tackles if, as Melanie pointed out, there was no possibility that they could reach the ball. So if it was simply a tackle and they couldn't actually get the ball, they could be held negligent and liable for the injuries that they caused other players to sustain. And although, as you pointed out, tackles are part of the game, a player who tackles another player has to have that fair chance of reaching the ball for it to be considered fair play. So in this case, and there were six other witnesses, and I'll share that with you too, as well as the referee. In the case, the court heard enough evidence to rule that Mr. Cox had no hope of getting the ball when he engaged in the slide tackle, especially since he approached from Mr. Miller's left side while the ball was on the right. So I will post that so that you can read it. Misha asked, did he have to read the tail of that amount? I'm not sure. This was done in 2023. Probably somebody, if you don't have that type of money, I have no idea where it would go. So maybe that's where the defendant might then turn around and accuse the league, or who knows. In my daughter-in-law's from Germany, this is Melanie, and you actually have to have personal liability insurance there. So you buy your own personal liability insurance if something like this happens, or as it was explained to me, if you happen to spill a glass of red wine on somebody's white pants that are really expensive. So we don't have that in Canada, though. So this is something to keep in mind. So Raquel, can I ask you if you're interested or if able to, could you briefly describe your case as well and what happened in it?
Yes, for sure. I can briefly describe it. So this was a case happening in recreational hockey. Drew Gustafson collided with Gordon Maxack, and the collision resulted in Gustafson's injuries. He suffered from a concussion, I think two broken teeth, and he had cuts inside of his mouth. And he claimed that he was blindsided. And he was saying that these injuries caused some personal life problems in his career and his relationship. So he was, and he claimed that he had some income loss. What the judge decided was that Makisak was guilty and that he had to pay damages of $700,000. That's in general.
Yeah, so a little different than the soccer one, but similar, right? So a lot more money, but a similar outcome with a responsibility being placed on, especially adults. So, some of you mentioned that, adults should be taught, maybe there should be a practice, things like that. But really, as adults, especially adults that play games, whether it's hockey, thank you, Raquel, or soccer, we do, at least in Canada, expect a certain amount of personal responsibility for people's actions, and that people will play according to fair play standards set out in the game. So thanks. Those are really good things. Thanks for explaining that other one, Raquel. I liked it because it was similar to the soccer one, and I appreciate you taking the time to do that too. Igor, I just want to circle back to you since you did, I wonder if you have any final thoughts, because this was something that you were personally involved in.
I just wanted to say that in the document that we received, there are a few terminology-wise words that they're not part of the loss of the game, FIFA loss of the game, and I'm offering my assistance just to fix a few of them in order for some future groups working on this case to be a little bit more clear regarding whether the referee may award a penalty versus the referee must award a penalty, regarding unsporting behavior versus using excessive force. There are a few of them that could be a little bit more clear, and I already said that it was a little bit difficult for me to work on a case that my friend was involved in, and also I was responsible for all the officials in British Columbia at that time, and it was a little bit like difficult to go back to that and take everything all over again. So, but thank you anyway. I think that it was great learning experience for both groups, and I on my behalf and behalf of my group, I can say just thank you, and we will go from there.
Thanks, Igor. And the case actually is the record that's in the Canadian Legal Information Institute. So the terminology and language all comes from what was actually recorded. And I think that's why you'll see in some cases, like if more of it had gone to court, they might have called experts to interpret some of that language, because you know, it implies that perhaps the referee did something wrong, but the way I read it, I don't think the referee did do anything wrong. You know, I think that at least in Canada, we have to have some responsibility on the individual.
I agree.
So thank you for that. Yeah. So you can actually, I'll make sure I send you the link where it is in the Canadian Legal Information Institute. And it is interesting if you're wondering about things like, Melanie, you'd asked about shinny hockey before. And, you know, you might want to go through to see if there's anything about the shinny hockey or other hockey things, or if you guys are offering different programs and you're feeling a little uncomfortable with the way it's set up, go ahead and look through there. There's thousands and thousands, like everything gets recorded in there, and you can go way back too. So it takes a little while to sit through it all. So I'm glad that you're grateful that you're not a lawyer after this exercise, Misha. And I hope that it was a really good learning opportunity for everybody. Before you hang up, hang on. Don't go too quickly, because I have a surprise for you if you have time to stay. But this does wrap up RM 103, Understand Legal Risk. And it's our last advanced learning event for 2023. I find that as much as I struggle to, like, it's a lot of thinking, but it is helpful for us in recreation and sport to understand how decisions related to negligence and liability are made in Canadian courts. And I encourage you to take the time to read Raquel's post as well, so that you can see the similarities and the consistencies, because we did talk about case precedents and how the courts will look at what's happened beforehand and possibly make similar decisions if there's similarities between the two. And I hope that by understanding this process a bit better, you'll be able to make your own thoughtful decisions about legal risk in your work. So consider the duty that you owe to your participants, maintain a reasonable standard of care, transfer legal risk through the use of waivers, by contracting out services, and through insurance. After you sign off, there's a feedback form, and I really value your feedback on this learning event. I did make changes from last year. I updated the case from a 1970s one to a more current one. So I really appreciate your feedback. And Julianne, I see your hands up, so I'll go to you first. But before you sign off, if you have time, I have a fun sort of celebratory holiday game that you might want to join me in if you're interested. And for those of you who join in, there's the opportunity to win Arte Bus, so a really nice bus. And I chose those because I can send them quite easily in the mail to you. So Juliana, did you have a comment or a question about this activity or this learning event?
Yeah, no, it was really quick on, because I'm trying to think, like, not just what happened to the teams, but in our regular day-to-day, how it would be. Since the beginning, as Madeline said, she was seeing him as like it was his fault. But at the beginning, I remember that we were looking a lot at the, or even probably myself, at the duty of care. And in my point of view, he didn't, it was either the referee or the league that would have a duty of care towards the other participants. And the way of thinking is that everybody that is joining has a duty of care.
Yeah, I think you're right. Like, by being a participant, you do have a duty of care to other people, and the court had to determine what constituted a standard of care. So the duty was established, and then what was the standard? So what was a safe tackle and what wasn't? That's where they drew the line. Unsafe was below, and safe was above the line.
And to keep in mind that some stuff, especially in the north, we're seeing that we let some things go, like in soccer game, we say everybody's going to come, we're always going to have a red card, somebody will come for us. But it's to keep in mind that those things, even though some stuff, they are part of the game or the activities, they are not supposed to happen, and we should try to avoid them. So I think it's maybe the main thing that he was sitting from that too.
Yeah, well, thank you for those extra thoughts. So I'll give you a game plan. I just got to start it. So we're going to play a little Kahoot. I'm going to send, Nathan, I'm going to send you the QR code. So two steps here. Let me just send it to Nathan, and then I will... Hopefully this works for you, Nathan, too. Okay, do you want me to share my screen so you can see, too? So the game pin is... copy link. There we go. Oh, it just gave you a link. Hold on. The game pin is 4839287, and I'll share my screen, too. There, so you should be able to jump in there. And if you do have to sign off, I know it's 12 o'clock. Actually, I'll stop the recording too. If you have to sign off, by all means, it's fine too.